I have been the servant of Ramana's simple teaching for 7 or 8 years now. And that's the way I think of myself, as the servant of this teaching. My first contact with any spiritual teaching or ideas at all, if you discount my earlier neurotic relationship with Christianity, was about 1994, 12 years ago, when I began to go see the Buddhist in a federal prison in Colorado, Tibetan Buddhist. And I was reflecting on this today. I think that we, when we come, if my experience is any indication, I think that most of us come to the spiritual world, to the spiritual community, to the spiritual life, really without a clue what we expect to get from it. It seems incumbent. I know that when I first started listening to the Tibetan Buddhists, I was swept away by the beauty and grandeur and mystery of what they seemed to be offering. But it seemed that it was incumbent upon me to tease out of the kind of general exposition that was offered to me some sense of what it was that I was to get from it, what I was there for, really. I mean, I knew about the Buddha and how he had woke up sitting under the tree and so forth, but I really didn't know what that was. I mean, what is it to wake up, really? What's that mean? What are they talking about? What are any of us talking about? I had heard the word enlightenment, and I had even heard that hearing the word enlightenment in a lifetime was the greatest of good luck, that most human beings never even hear the word, and that hearing the word itself was a stroke of luck. I think the Buddhists that were speaking to me told me it was on the order of a turtle at the bottom of the sea rising blindly to the surface and just by sheer good fortune coming up within the center of a life preserver. There's that kind of luck, that incomprehensible stroke of luck, just to have heard the word enlightenment. But what in the world does it mean, really? What does awakening mean? What is it that we're here for? What are we in this for, anyway? I had, even with the Buddhists, even before having heard of Ramana, I had big experiences of samadhi and bliss and breaking open, emptiness, or at least that's what they told me I should call it, was emptiness. I had huge experiences of oceanic consciousness and all of that, even before happening upon Ramana, even before having been trapped by Ramana's gaze, Ramana's simplicity. And I guess that if nobody ever put me to this, nobody ever does, do they? Tell you, what are you here for? What do you think you're going to get from all of this spiritual talk and all of this spiritual practice and all of these spiritual experiences? What do you get from it? What are you here for? But if they had, I guess I would have been forced to say that what I was looking for was kind of a continuation of some of those big experiences. permanentizing of the samadhi, the breaking open, the oceanic consciousness, a wiping out of the everyday reality of life in the world and life in my life. But I still wouldn't have known what in the world I was talking about. I read everything I could get my hands on of a spiritual nature. I read, everything I could get my hands on. And from these things, I gleaned some sense of what this enlightenment business must be. I mean, it must be like godlike, right? It must be like knowing everything. No thought, but just constant, blissful knowing of everything. Seeing everything. No past, no future. Something. And of course, I never, ever would have even considered the possibility of asking anyone who was coming to teach me, well, what is this anyway? What do I get from this anyway? I mean, it was self-evident that everybody knew what enlightenment was, knew what awakening was, knew what it was to be awake, knew what it was to be asleep, and so forth. And I would merely reveal my own stupidity by suggesting that, yeah, what is this anyway? What's all this about anyway? I think that if we reflect upon it at all for just a bit, we will see that for most of us, for most of our spiritual life, no matter what particular flavor we might expect it to have, we would think that enlightenment would enlighten the story of our lives. That this me, this story of life, of history, of the future of me, the past of me, my relationships with you, the way I act in the world, the way I receive what I receive and reject what I reject would be enlightened, would be suffused with the light of God consciousness, that there would be an end to all of the movement of trying to get and trying to get rid of, that there would be absolute harmony and peace in the way that I thought about things and in the way I related to things, that I would seek nothing and try to get rid of nothing, that my thoughts would be pure and clean, that my emotions would be pure and clean. Probably I would be lacking in emotion, since emotion seems to have this aspect of it of trying to get or get rid of some drama, that the drama would disappear, that my foolishness would be gone, that I would no longer think stupid thoughts, that I would no longer want stupid things, that I would just be all the time peace, good thoughts. I would never think, why that stinking idiot cut me off. I would think, ah, Om Shanti. And, you know, for a while I participated in Buddhist meditation practice and was seen by those around me to be advanced in my spiritual understanding. And being seen to be advanced in my spiritual understanding, of course, I was. Everything was Om Shanti. All is well. There is no problem anywhere to be found. There is no issue, no dispute, no friction, no resistance. Ah, I see how it is that ugliness is really beauty. I see nothing but beauty. I see nothing but peace, joy, and wonder. Nothing. No bad thoughts. None of that. And I pretended. I mean, you know, I really wanted to be that. I really wanted everybody to see that I was awake, because I was told that I was awake. I mean, you know, I am not so stupid that I can read the texts and the sutras and the shastras and the teachings and so forth and not see that what they are saying is that I am awake, that I am already awake, that I am already Buddha mind, alive, aware, consciousness itself. And so that these thoughts, these negative thoughts and these bad ideas and so forth, well, they weren't really here. There weren't anything to them. Because I knew, and I might be different from everybody. I might be stupider. I am pretty stupid, mostly. But I might even be stupider than I think I am. But I suspect that this is true for most of us. I knew that whatever it was that I was in this for, I would know by my state of mind that I had gotten it. The only way that I would know that I was enlightened and awake would be because I would see the fundamental, radical, incomprehensible transformation of my state of mind. I would see no more bad thoughts, no more bad emotions, that the essence of enlightenment, the essence of awakening, the essence of Buddha mind was to be seen in the story of me. It would be transformed totally. Everything would be different. Totally. But something wrong with that. Because what I hear and what I heard and what I had been told all along was that reality doesn't change. The reality is eternal, permanent. That the reality of awake consciousness is unaffected and unmoved and unchanging always. So the idea that what I was looking for was some transformation in my mind had to be off somehow. Not quite right. Not consistent with the totality of the teaching. And after a considerable period of knowing myself to be awake and knowing that all my thoughts were sweetness and fragrant and beautiful and all my emotions were perfect and everything I did and thought and dreamed of was perfection itself, after a considerable period of time of knowing that and trying to maintain that ridiculous idea as something true, I plunged into a hell of, well, just hell, knowing that I was not awake, knowing that everything that I had said and thought and pretended to be and wanted to be, and that I was none of that, that I was a liar, a fraud, a fake, could see that. And it tore me apart. Didn't know what to do. Didn't know where to turn. I could still do my meditation practice, but it did me no good. I knew that. And I knew it was me, see. I knew it was me. I knew it wasn't the state of things in general in spiritual life. I knew it was me. That it was my error, my mistake, my sinfulness, my falseness. And I had no clue what to do about that. None. So that I would continue to do my meditation practice, but, and I'd feel okay. You know, I mean, you sit and watch your breath and it feels pretty good. It settles you down a little bit. But all along is this fire of fraudulent, the certainty of my own fraudulence, the certainty of the hopelessness of any possibility of me becoming Buddha. I had tried and failed. And it would have been okay with me at that juncture if I could just have put the whole thing behind me and gone on about my business. Went up, get high, play tennis, enjoy myself, whatever I was doing. Read, go back to reading and stuff. But I couldn't. I had gone too far. I had sunk my entire, all of my hope into the possibility of spiritual awakening. And I had arrived at a juncture where I could only die. Or I knew not what. And it was then, that finally I started turning back to Ramana, back to Ramana's simplicity. And in reading Ramana, Ramana's kind of, if you read the talks, for example, and I walked around with talks, it's like a 500-page book of transcriptions of Ramana's conversations with seekers. And if you read talks, for example, you'll find Ramana speaking of a lot of things that are alien to our culture, speaking of a lot of teachings and ways of looking at things and so forth that just are not part of our culture. Even Tibetan Buddhism is closer to our culture than the strangeness of Vedanta practice and teaching. It is very strange. So that if you walk around as I did with the talks and read it constantly, I found that I really couldn't get much of anything out of that. I couldn't get a clue from anything that Ramana was talking about as to how to fix my mind so as to make it awake, so as to make it pure and enlightened. Try as I might, I could not get it what my mind should look like in order that I could become that. Because really, that's all I was ever trying to do, was get an idea of what my mind should look like and then be that. And I couldn't. With the Tibetans, I kind of could, you know, and I fell short. But with Ramana, I couldn't get what it was I was supposed to be, what it was supposed to look like, what I was supposed to think, and what I wasn't supposed to think. And finally, I came to see that Ramana, who himself stumbled upon reality as a 16-year-old boy, without himself being gifted with a full set of ideas of what he should be and what he should think and what he shouldn't think, I finally realized that there is a thread that runs through all of the spiritual teachings, all of them. It doesn't matter what they are. It doesn't matter whether they are Christian or Islam or Jewish or Hindu or Vedanta or Buddhist or any of it. There is a there is an underlying, simple, radical suggestion that is common to all of them. Although in many of them, it's difficult to tease it out of the cloud of confusion that covers them. And that simple, radical suggestion is that first of all, that always and forever, eternally, permanently, without any conditions whatsoever, I am awake. I am awake consciousness. I am what I have always wanted. And the second, which flows from the first, is that therefore, the only problem, the only thing that creates all of the suffering and wanting and not wanting and striving and trying not to strive and trying to figure out what I should be and trying to figure out what I should not be, the only problem whatsoever is a false belief about what I am. This comes in Buddhism as misidentification. But in all teachings, there is this view that always and forever I am what I am, and it is perfect. And that, therefore, all of my problems, all of my suffering, all of my projection of fault on you, all of my trying to get what I need and get rid of what I don't need, that all arises only because I have a deep-seated, unconscious, unseen false belief about what I am. And the third thing that is absolutely fundamentally obvious from that, if those two things are true, and those are the things that we are told by all the great ones from the very beginning. So the third thing that flows directly from this first two is that the only solution, really, the only solution, it has nothing to do with becoming anything or getting rid of anything or learning anything or unlearning anything. The only solution is to know the truth of what I am. All the rest of it is marking time. All the rest of it is marching in place. Running in place, more like it. Yes, only the truth of what I am can solve the problem of the false belief about what I am. Nothing else.
So whatever you are is the truth.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And that's the teaching of Ramana Maharshi. It is the simple, radical, stands by itself. The teaching of Ramana Maharshi is this. If you would be finished with suffering, if you would be finished with misery, if you would be finished with hatred and aggression, of wanting and not getting, of getting and not wanting, if you would be finished in this lifetime, in this moment, with all of that, you must only know what you are. Consciously. And that knowing of what you are consciously eradicates the false belief. And it's all that can eradicate the false belief, which all agree is the only problem. Wow. That's way different from what I thought it was. I mean, really, way different from what I thought it was. I thought I had to become something. I thought I had to figure out what I should be and be that. I thought that the whole game was about me and my mind and my actions and my behavior and my opinions and my desires and my aversions, and that that all had to be fixed. But that's all of that, that whole array of wanting and getting and not wanting and not being able to get rid of of small-mindedness, of selfishness, of stupidity, of suffering, of hating you, of wanting you. That whole array, the whole history of me, the whole story of me, the whole character is that which I falsely, unconsciously believe myself to be. So, if that's the case, how in the world can anything done in that realm mean anything, have any effect, any fundamental effect? It's not to say that, in fact, it has nothing whatsoever to say about anything that happens in that realm. Nothing. The claim is that if I am free of the idea that that whole story is me, I will know myself to be eternally happy. Clear. That's the claim. No matter what continues to go on in that story, no matter what doesn't go on in that story, I am what I am. Here. Now, in the early days of the reacquaintance in this country with the Eastern spiritual teachings, you know, when the Beatles were going to India and all of that was happening, right? When all of that was going on, the Ram Dass said, "Be here now." And we weren't ready to hear that, really. But it's really simple. It's too simple. Be here now. It's even simpler than that, really. In fact, that is way too complicated. Because the truth is that you are here now. And nothing whatsoever that you can do, nothing whatsoever that you can do can change that. You are here now. So, if it's true, as Ramana tells us, that all that's required for our happiness to reveal itself is to know the truth of what I am, then, well, I already do, don't I? So, how hard can that be? Really? I am here. Am I not? Can I deny that? Can I? Can I? I am here. How do I know that? That's self-inquiry. Nothing more to it than that. I am here. How do I know that? Right now, I am here. How do I know that? If any of us, you see, here's the, and I haven't quite figured out how to say this as clearly as I would like to, probably because I say too much. Self-inquiry, which is the simple teaching of Ramana Maharshi, has nothing at all to do with your state of mind. Nothing. Has nothing to do with your state of mind. Nothing. It has nothing to do with the shape and the character of the story of you that is present in this moment. Nothing. There is nothing that self-inquiry has to say or speak to about the nature of the thoughts that are present in your mind now, or a minute ago, or a minute from now. There is nothing whatsoever that the practice of self-inquiry has to say about your the state of your desires, about what you want, about what you need to get rid of, about what you really want to have. It has nothing to say about that, nor does it have anything to say about the existence of those desires and aversions. Nothing. All of that is irrelevant in self-inquiry. It has nothing at all to say about the small-mindedness that you may see in yourself, the selfishness. It has nothing at all to say about your generosity, nothing to say about your understanding, nothing to say about your stupidity, nothing. All of that is irrelevant to the inquiry. Self-inquiry has only one concern, one object, and that is the reality of what it is to be here, now. It is the possibility, maybe unique in human beings, of deliberately, consciously moving attention with discipline and purpose to the experience of being here, now, to see what you are directly, consciously, to destroy the false idea about what you are. Now, it is natural for us to think that the destruction of this false idea, the discovery of the reality of what I am, will do something to the story of me. And we, therefore, in this practice, as all practices, we look for confirmation or a lack of confirmation to the state of affairs that's within my mind. It's okay. Doesn't matter. That too is not the concern of self-inquiry. Here's the deal. This is from my own experience. If anyone will, every day, once a day, take 15 minutes of the day and do nothing in that 15 minutes other than try to have the direct conscious experience of what it is to be. Anyone who will do that every day. Everything else will be taken care of. The certainty, the certain, ever-present, already present realization that I am perfection and happiness and joy and eternal. Well, you know what? This is the secret of eternal happiness. Anyone who will do this will see that this realization of eternal happiness that is ever present is ever present and is me, no matter what's happening in my mind. Truly, no matter what's happening in my mind, no matter how stupid or brilliant I may be, no matter how needy or full I may be, this realization that is already here will have you. And what happens in the mind, what happens in the story of you, well, that's not your concern. Truthfully, it never has been. If it had been, in my life, I would long ago have made a mind that was pure and clear and clean as would all of you. This is this offering from Ramana Maharshi, this possibility of wiping out the false belief about what I am, is a gift beyond all comprehension. And it is simple beyond belief. And it is easy beyond belief. What is really difficult is to understand why it's so hard for us to get this. You know, I was watching TV this morning. I think I was watching the news, which is really depressing. It's a horror story this humanity has made of itself. But I was watching the news, and then a commercial came on for Geico, and the Geico Gecko, who is one of my favorite creatures of all time. He was talking to somebody, and the guy was trying to make complicated what it was that he was offering him, and he said, "Look, mate," I wish I could do his accent, but I can't, but he said, "Look, mate, it's this simple. No matter how much money you had, if somebody told you that all you have to do is stand up and you will get a whole bunch more money, what would you do? Would you say, 'Oh, no, I think I'll just keep sitting down'?" And that's the way I feel about this teaching. If somebody tells you that no matter how wondrous and how happy and how clear and how full of understanding you might be, all you have to do is take 15 minutes a day and deliberately move your attention to the experience of being, just raw, naked being, even saying being is saying too much, and you will reveal to yourself the absolute perfection of eternal happiness that you are, what would you do? Would you say, "Oh, no, I think I'm okay like I am"? But that's what it feels like. Come up here. And that, as best as I can tell you, I warned you that once I started talking, I would keep talking for a long time, but you shut me up.
Do I need this?
Huh?
Do I need this?
Yeah.
Okay. It's nice to be with you.
Well, it's nice to be with you. What's your name?
My name's Marshall.
Marshall.
And I'm Molly's friend from Santa Fe that talked to you recently.
Uh-huh.
So.
Oh, Molly Hunt.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. She said you might come. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I feel like talking with you because I don't fully agree, or not agree, but, you know, you're speaking from your experience. And my experience is differing somewhat from yours.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I want to talk to you. I
You're not here?
I'm here.
Well, then, as far as I can tell, our experience is the same.
Well, here's what I'm hearing and interpreting what you're saying. Here's a piece that applies to me. It's that if you... What I hear you saying is that if I see who I am, and if I give that 15 minutes a day, that will, and this is where I interpret, that will handle everything else in my life. It doesn't mean that...
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay, cool. So.
Okay. I'm saying everything else will be taken care of, but everything else already is taken care of. What will be missing... Here's what the actual consequence of this practice is. What's missing is the idea, the sense, the deep-seated feeling that something is at stake in all this. Because what's revealed is that just as they have said? Really, and all of them have said this, all is already perfect. And we misunderstand that teaching because we look at the state of things, like the state of my mind, or the state of the world, the state of humanity, and think that that's what they're speaking of as perfection. Think that in order for things to be perfect, that there can be no strife, no conflict, no drama, no hatred, no lust, no desire, no anything. Kind of, well, nirvana, I guess. What I'm saying, and what truly those who are inconceivably great have said, is that what you are is already perfect, has never changed, has never moved, has never been affected, has never taken, has never pushed away, has never gotten, has never held, ever.
I think I know that. I've been enjoying that.
Yes.
You know, I, and so that's why I kind of want to kind of play with you a little bit right now. I know that.
Of course you do. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. And I thought knowing that would solve a lot of problems.
Fix the mind. Yes, right.
No, I don't quite mean fix the mind. That's okay. Why I want to talk here. There seems to be two veins of things that I don't feel like I have peace about in my life at a deep level. One is, the one that really is pressing on me is this piece around there seem to be some stories that just grab me, and no matter what attempt I use to rest in peace, rest in who I am, they're like strangling me. And I was talking to Molly recently, who is very, very beautifully resting, you know, still working some stuff out. But she said it's good to get help.
Yes, it is.
So,
what's the problem? Now, understand what I'm asking you.
Okay.
I hear what you're saying, and I know what you're describing. This experience of being caught up in the
story.
In the story.
Even right? though I know I'm not the story.
Why is it a problem to be caught up in the story? What is it about that experience that disturbs you? You who are undisturbable.
The only thought I have in response to that is that clearly in that story, I don't know who I am. And that's where I seem to need to
If
help.
Knowing who you are comes and goes, then knowing who you are also is part of the story. You see that?
Yeah. But, there's a kind of knowing who I am that's happened. And I don't care anymore whether I know or don't know. I'm just so grateful.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's there. That's always
but,
there.
But can you see? Well, it wasn't always there.
No, it wasn't. I mean,
It wasn't. No, see, so tell the truth. It wasn't always there. There was a time when that feeling of whatever it was that you just described was not there. And now it's here. And wow, that's really cool. But turns out it's not always here either. Because when I'm caught up in the story, then that feeling of peacefulness acceptance and so forth, gratitude and so forth, is not here. Instead, there is the experience of being caught up in the story.
Well, one thing that was really catchy, that I was really kind of, that Molly helped me with, was this idea that I'm always going to feel love, or it's always going to feel like mm-hmm. heaven or divine. So I feel corrected on that piece.
Except that if that is the case, then why is it a problem that you don't always feel that? That you are sometimes caught up in the story and sometimes not.
That's a good question.
And a more direct presentation of that question is, for whom is this problem? You see, if all of this were happening in a story you were reading, or in a movie you were watching, that had really good production values and it really, you know, evoked the feeling of being lost or being found and so forth, well, you would enjoy it, no doubt. It would be an enjoyable story to immerse yourself in and so forth. But at no time, never, never, would the conviction be present that that story is you. And therefore, at no time would there be the idea present that it's a problem that now I don't feel complete and whole. I used to feel complete and whole, and now I don't. If it were a story that you were reading, that wouldn't be a problem. It would just be a characteristic of the story, a part of the plot.
I think I'm about to get that.
So the solution, the problem therefore remains, and this is something that we have a really hard time getting, is that this false belief about what we are is unseen. It's not like, oh right, I'm wrong about who I am. I know what it feels like to be wrong about who I am. It's unseen. It's completely unconscious. And so long as the involvement and entanglement with the storyline that is unfolding, which includes this really wonderful experience of being free and so forth, and includes the not-so-wonderful experience of being caught up and so forth, as long as that belief is in operation, unseen, even the idea, even the no, oh, yes, I know, I get it, I know who I am. And that's authentic. I'm not making fun of you. That's an authentic experience. But even that experience is occurring within the story. It is an aspect of the story. It's what has given rise to the possibility in your life of feeling at times a whole and okay with everything. And as long as that belief is in operation, unseen and unconscious, then I will regret the appearance within the story of the loss of that feeling of knowing who I am and the getting caught up in the storyline again. So long as I believe that that's what I am, then I'm going to really not like it when it goes wrong. And since the story that I believe myself to be is actually everything, you know, there's no aspect of the story of me, the mind, the memories and the, you know, the expectations and so forth. There's no part of that that is not part of this false belief. Nothing that is done within the story can do anything about that false belief. The only sword that cuts that out is even within the story, the full, conscious, deliberate looking for the reality of what I am, seeking nothing other than to have the direct, unmediated experience in this moment of what I am. And that, over time, erodes that belief, that unseen, false belief about what I am. And over time, this whole sense that there is something hugely at stake in how this unfolds, how this story unfolds, something really hugely at stake, that vanishes. So that's the teaching of Ramana. And that's the point of self-inquiry. Nothing new is gained. If something new is gained, then it can be lost. Nothing new is gained.
I have to say I've gotten lazier.
Gotten?
Really lazy.
Lazy, yes, of course we do. That's one of the ways in which we keep, we fall in love with this idea that I'm the story. I mean, especially if I've got a good story, right? I mean, if it's a good story full of storm and sound and fury and love and hatred and, ambition and all of that, the deeper and the richer and the more juicy the story is, the more and I fall in love with being the story. I fall asleep, fall into a trance, a dream, if you will. And laziness is part of the ways in which I maintain that. Ah, yes, well, everything's okay. All is one. Om Shanti. I get it. But why do I keep getting caught up in the story? You see? So, this is really good because you've pretty much stripped yourself of all your excuses now, and there's only one thing for you to do, and that is to look whenever you can to see what you are.
Well, it's... I've been with either read or heard or sat with some teachings, teachers of Ramanas, from Ramana's lineage, and they've talked about how one guy who really, really helped me a lot, Prasad, I don't know if you ever met him, American guy.
I know who he is.
But he really helped me a lot, and maybe there's a misunderstanding I got from him, but he definitely said, you know, once you wake up, it's just pedal to the metal, enjoy the party. And whatever the party is, it can be hell, but enjoy it. So there's a part of me, not a part, a big, huge, passion in me is, it's like I've lost interest in spiritual. I've just lost interest. It's like, let's just party. Let's just, but... Now,
but here's the deal, man. I mean, if that's true, it may be true or may not. I don't speak to that kind of thing. But if that's true, then you would be enjoying the fact that you were caught up in the story. So
the only time,
evidently you're not there yet.
The only time it stops being enjoyable, and I'm really just exploring what's really true for me. It may sound like I'm, not going along with something right now, but it's... I may not see you again for a long, long time, so that's why I'm wanting to talk this way. But the only, when I have the help of either how I inquire, which is often when something really painful is up for me, I'll say, can this be okay? Can I welcome this? Mm-hmm. Like Rumi's poem, the guest house. Can it be okay that this is coming for a visit? Instantly, I'm back in the grace. Mm-hmm.
And that's okay, it's a good therapeutic practice. It's and if what you want, it just depends on what you want, Michael.
I want
to. If what you want is to have some kind of a therapeutic practice that'll get you through until the grave claims you, Till the grave claims you, then that's as good as any. If what you want is to be finished with all the practices whatsoever, then that won't do it for you.
That's why I feel like I've gotten lazy, is I have no interest in practice anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be what I've told I am.
And you are you not? I mean, how could you be anything other than that? But you don't believe it. You believe you're this story of Michael. And you have, and you're very, very smart. And you have some very effective practices. And don't think that you're done with practices so long as you are practicing. I don't know, wanting to be comfortable, wanting to be free with practices. So long as you are doing something to try to get free of practices, don't think you're done with practices. So long as you are seeking out comfort and good feelings, don't think you're done with practices. We are, all we're ever doing is practice. Oh, from before we've ever heard of spiritual practice, we are practicing. We are practicing something, some technique that we learn that works. It may not work really well, but it works. And you've happened upon some techniques that are more effective than others, and you're practicing them. And that's okay. I mean, really, it's okay. You see, one of the things about self-inquiry that sets it apart from all the other stuff is that self-inquiry cares not about your practices at all. It doesn't want to do away with your practices. It doesn't want to fix them. It doesn't want to add new practices. It just wants you to see honestly, directly, nakedly, without mediation, what you are, and to see that you always see that. It wants you to be free of the false belief about what you are. It doesn't want you to be free of your practices. It doesn't say, this practice is bad and this practice is good. It doesn't say, stop all your practicing. It says only this, you are not what you think you are. See what you are. Just that. And then the practices that continue within this story of Michael, who cares? They're fine. Really, just fine. I have seen a lot of people, and I want to talk about anybody in particular. I don't know Prasad. I've never
seen. Oh, forget Prasad.
Right, but I know there are a lot of teachers that claim to be teaching self-inquiry, and they're not. I mean, they're not. God knows why they say they are, but they're not. Self-inquiry is very raw, very naked. It is. When I speak of it as a practice, it makes me want to vomit. But what else can I do? There absolutely is the possibility every moment in this life to consciously see what you are and know it to be yourself. Really. And it is in absolutely within your power to do so. And doing so wipes out the false idea of what you are. That's all it does. It doesn't fix the practices. It doesn't say, hold on to this practice, get rid of that practice. It has one purpose only, and that is to eradicate the false idea of what you are, which false idea is unseen. And there is no way in the world that the false idea can be seen. The truth can be seen. False cannot. Belief cannot. Reality can be seen. Reality is always seen.
You know what catches me up is there's a term called doing the spiritual bypass. Have you heard that term?
No, I haven't.
It's a term that people who were trying to be really emotionally, spiritually integrated. They might refer to somebody, they're just trying to meditate it away, and they're trying to do a spiritual bypass.
Mm-hmm.
Bypass their humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And
Boy, they got word. They got a term for everything, don't they?
Yeah, but and so that kind of keeps me into believing that I need to work my story more, that I need to work me more. And why?
And who is it that believes that?
Yeah. Well, why I'm saying this is for that. Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying you shouldn't work your story more.
Hold on. I'm not trying to affirm that.
Okay.
I'm not trying to affirm that. I'm just trying to say, as I'm unwinding here with you,
uh-huh.
I'm starting to see, how do I get caught? You know, it's like I actually feel like I've been around a lot of the teaching that says, well, you need to process yourself to.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's most of the teachings do that. You know, most of the teachers and most of the teachings in this country do that. That's the truth. There was back in the 90s, there was this great rush of excitement and hope that came with those who came from Papaji and Nisargadatta and so forth. And somehow it got frittered away until now what we're doing is trying to fix ourselves and process ourselves. But you don't have to do that. Really. I mean, you don't have to stop doing it either. But the truth is here. No matter what you're doing, no matter what amount of processing is going on, no matter what amount of therapy is going on, you are here. You are here. And you know it. And you are absolutely capable without needing to believe anything, needing to believe nothing, you're absolutely capable of moving your attention directly to the experience of being naked. And that's all there is to self-inquiry. And the outcome is the loss of the belief that I am this story. And I tell you the truth. Therein lies the only hope there is for humanity. Is for you to be done with the false belief about what you are.
I have no idea how to do that other than just know that that's what I want.
This is the best. The only thing, you are here, are you not? You cannot deny that, can you? Why not? Look and see what is here that makes it impossible for you to deny that you are. That's the whole of it.
Seems like what I want to put my attention onto is something shows up that really wants attention. That's not this. You know, something really wants attention.
Yeah. And you do this whenever it occurs to you. That's all. Do not concern yourself with what happens during the time when you are not looking at what's real. That's irrelevant. The only time that's of any consequence is the moment when you are looking directly with eyes wide open at reality. It's my great joy to spend this time with you.
And when this gentleman said he didn't know when he was going to see you, I said, okay, I don't know when I'm going to see John next time, so I better talk to you. Although each time when I hear your things on the net, I download this podcast, I always walk away with this feeling it's coming now. You said it's so simple, and I think now this is, I don't need to even hear it anymore, ever. That's it. Why do I? The next thing I heard this last from July, this two faces or whatever, is okay. So after this, I don't even need to. And I come again, and I find again, I want to hear some more tapes, and I find myself, despite this conviction that I heard everything I ever need to hear, that I come. And so it came to me, maybe this one last piece, and I know already I've been through that many times, but tonight it seems like, what is this 15 minutes really, truly about? I'm getting to the point where I feel like I don't need to hear 10,000 more tapes and books and satsangs and everything. I just want to do that thing, starting tonight, starting tomorrow, every day this thing. And I'm sometimes doing it or think I'm doing it, and yet, obviously, it's not so can you tell me this 15 minutes really most specifically, like I know it doesn't involve any posture, any breathing, anything, I know that much, but can you tell me a little bit more about that?
It's just as I said to Michael, you are here, you know that beyond a shadow of a doubt, you are here. How do you know that? That's what you're looking for. Now, whatever it takes, the only requirement is that you see for yourself that this is what you want. By that I mean, what you want is not Buddha mind, is not oceanic consciousness, that what you want is to know what you are and be finished with all the lies. That's all. If that's what you want, and if you know that to be what you want, you will find a way into yourself. No one, Eric, right? No one can tell you how to find yourself. No one. You are here. You're absolutely, certainly here. Look and see. What is it to be here? Really? How do I know that? Really? That's beyond all thought, all beyond all theories and so forth, this here-ness that you are. Look for that. See that what you want, only thing you want, is to know what you are. And follow that, and it'll take you home. You cannot be denied. You cannot. What you want is not to hear it said one more time in a simpler and clearer way. I mean, you can do that. I mean, that's part of the story, and it can be enjoyable. It's not that it's bad to listen to the tapes or to read the books or any of that, but to see that that's not what you want. The reason that that draws your attention is because it cries out to you to see what you truly want, which is to know beyond a shadow of a doubt, consciously, in this life, within this story, the truth of what you are. To be finished with doubt.
It seems so obvious, so embarrassing to even talk about it, and yet...
Yes. But it's okay. It's okay. what we're looking for in these conversations always is confirmation of what's obvious. It's so obvious that it seems stupid. We're looking that for confirmation that it is really this obvious. It really is this obvious, Eric. Really is. And I promise you from my heart, I promise you along with Ramana and along with the Buddha and along with everybody else, I promise you that if you will follow that desire to know the truth of what you are without regard to anything about whether you're doing it right, whether you're doing it wrong, that you cannot be denied. Cannot be. And this false idea of what you are is doomed. It doesn't mean that the craziness or stupidity or brilliance or anything about Eric is going to go away or not go away. But the idea that it's you is gone.
The intellectual part is already done. Yeah. But this has to be...
This is much, much prior to any of that.
I'm looking to that kind of confirmation. Not that I understand better.
Yes, that's right. You're looking to the mind for confirmation of what cannot be confirmed within the mind, because the mind precisely is the false belief that I am the story. Look to what you are for confirmation. Look to this being here now for confirmation. You are here always. You are always accessible to yourself. You are always available. You're never absent. Never. Look there. Look here. And do it whenever you can.
And the way will find itself, I guess.
That's right. Exactly. You say that very well. The seeking will find its own way. You will find your own way. No one can tell you how. No one. All I can do is tell you what you're looking for. What you're looking for is the truth. You're not looking for some transformation of the mind. You're looking for the truth. And that's here. Always here. Never absent.
Mind-boggling.
Okay? Is that helpful?
Right. I got it.
Okay.
The way will come.
It will. No steps. All that's needed from you is determination. Intention is all. Really.
I think I can hear you.
Okay.
See what happens. Thank you.
A pleasure to see you. Okay, I guess we're done here. Wow. I always show up at these meetings and I say, how in the world are we ever going to spend 2 hours here? I mean, how is that possible? And then at the end, it's like, oh my God, it's gone already. I love you all. I am so grateful and at your feet for your willingness and your presence. I am the servant of Ramana's teaching, and I am the servant of you always. That's why I bow to you. So thank you for the satsang. Om Shanti. May all being know itself.